Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Noble Keenan. Fuck that.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. You know what to do if you like what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover some new ones, know what's happening in the music world, and all the usual spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you like to get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Maynard James Keenan. We're going to be talking about the launch of Pussifer TV. The Tool and a Perfect Circle frontman going to take us back to the birth of Pussifer and the influence of underground comedy in the 80s and 90s, as well as the plans for the streaming hub, which will include a pair of upcoming concert films and how it all ties in with the music they make. Keenan's also going to talk in depth about his vineyard being adaptable to climate change and the importance of community both in his farm and the Pussifer project. So I am so excited to be doing this interview right here. One of my all-time favorite musicians. It's Kyle Meredith with Maynard James Keenan.
Hi.
What we've got here today is Pussifer. Pussifer TV is the new thing that you're working on. And I got to tell you, first off, it's been so much fun researching for this interview just because of the levels of what this project has always been and what you have going on now. I'll just let you explain, if you would, what exactly is Pussifer TV and why did you decide to kind of collect everything in this way?
Well, over the years, we've developed quite a few characters, quite a few skits, sketches that kind of go along with the Pussifer story, you know, along with, of course, music and a live show, which you've probably read up on. It's quite a fun show. You know, but when we're getting on the road, we're getting ready for recording or getting ready for releasing or touring, some of the filming ended up kind of taking a back seat just because of timing between, you know, three bands and a winery. Some of that stuff ends up, we could do more with it, but we just don't have time. The pandemic, however, really opened the floodgates for us to really dive in and do more filming just because we couldn't tour. So we really went for it in 2020. We did the Arcasante live with the Existential Reckoning. We did the Money Shot live at the Mayan Theater, you know, the Billy Dee and the Hall of Feathered Serpents. And we're continuing that tradition. And we have stuff from before that we've done that we're re-releasing. And so, you know, it was just really a great opportunity for us because this project just lends itself to this kind of insanity. So we're going for it.
This project and the insanity. The more and more I watched it, I was looking back and reading up on some history of yourself and thinking about, you know, you come from the Midwest in Ohio. I'm here in Kentucky. And I think we came up different years apart, but really similar ways when this type of, I say content, really, I'm really talking about comedy. I mean, it reminds me of pre-internet when you had to have someone cooler and older to show you this stuff lots of times in secret, and it was usually dangerous comedy. You know, that, you know, I'm thinking of like the UHF days or something like that. I don't know if that's what I really want to call it, but that's sort of like you've built this world. And I don't know if you can, if you're able to put the words on exactly what this world is you're building, but it does remind me a lot of that type of late 70s, mid to mid 80s type of underground dangerous comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I had older friends turn me on to, Monty Python, and that was all late night TV, and eventually that segued into Kids in the Hall, and eventually Trailer Park Boys. So yeah, there was always that snarky uncle turning you on to some stuff that bordered on stuff you're not supposed to watch. Now it's down pat. Now it's South Park does it every week.
Yeah, but there's something about the way you're doing it that really just feels like it still taps into that. Like South Park is still cleaned up. I don't know, it's still a mass produced thing. And I don't know, there's something, I guess, in that raw sort of way that I would want. It doesn't exist in very many places. What you're doing is, it's really interesting in that sort of way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's an element to Post-Verbal we have. We don't take ourselves seriously, but we take the art seriously. But even in that, half of my characters, the mustache is barely taped on, and it doesn't matter. We're not worried about you seeing the tape, or the wig, never being quite centered. It's not really the joke. It just ends up being our MO.
When you sort of came up with the idea of Pussifer, like, was it fully realized in your head, or is it something that you figured out along the way?
No, it came out of working with Lauren Milligan back in when she used to have a variety show, tongue-in-cheek variety show called Tantrum back in LA, and in the back of the Diamond Club off of Hollywood Boulevard. And that was back before you'd even heard names like Brian Posehn and David Cross and CJ Arabia and Bob Odenkirk and Tenacious D. Like all these comedians were working their stuff out there. Craig Anton, Mark Feit, the list goes, it's an endless list of incredible talents. Simpatico was a crazy outfit. Will Ferrell was on that stage with Simpatico. So it kind of was born out of that. Laura's character was called Tawny Port. She was fresh out of rehab, having been a childhood actor. And she's got this variety show called Tantrum. And people would come down and kind of work out their stuff. But her boyfriend at the time was supposed to come close to the show, rock star dude, who just never showed up. And eventually he showed up. And his name was Vince, and he was a moving target of craziness. His band was called Pussifer, but it was also called this and it was called that. Like it was always a moving target. He would change the direction with the wind because he was kind of, the hair bands, and then all of a sudden they had flannel shirts on. Whatever was popular at the time, Vince would kind of chase that. But if he showed up, because he's always drunk somewhere. So Pussifer kind of was born out of the Tantrum scene. And eventually you probably saw it on Mr. Show when Pussifer did a little bit on Mr. Show. It predates Mr. Show.
So I guess, in the sense that where you've taken it now, I don't know, was there a point that you can find like, this is what it's going to become? Because again, from that moment, even on Mr. Show, it's become so much wider scope than that.
Yeah. I mean, the first shirt that I ever did, because it was attached to merch and stuff like that too, just ideas of silly things and snarky, ironic crap. But the first shirt we did was the Free Francis Bean shirt. That was not well received.
It's funny though. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Generally, most comedy, I think people have kind of forgotten in the age of cancel culture, most comedy, somebody's going under the bus. That's just, even if it's us ourselves, somebody's going under the bus. And you forget that that's kind of the role of comedy, is to that uncomfortable release and a laugh of things you're not supposed to say. And then you release it and the demon is out and gone. But, you know, Pussifer just kind of evolved over time with some of those sketch comedy things and our attempt to kind of put them in a musical context. And I think it wasn't really until I started working with Matt Mitchell that the music really started to kind of become more of the focal point. So, you know, working with him and then, of course, Karina Round and Juliette Camagère, once those people kind of came into the picture, it really laser focused. And so that's been a joy working with them and an endless revolving door of other musicians kind of coming through, just kind of lending their talents, kind of, you know, throwing back to the tantrum days of just watching these incredible talents come through the door and adjust their set or whatever they were going to do to whatever was going on in the room with Laura, with Tawny, I should say, because there was always a theme for that particular day, for that show. And then everybody was having to kind of adjust whatever riffs or whatever acts or whatever they were working on. They would have to kind of adjust it to what was happening in the room as a very meta situation.
And that, I'm sure, allowing for, like, it's impressive how this all comes together at some point, because there's so much room for disaster in the good ways, in the great comedy ways, those room for disasters right there. But like, when you're finally conceptualizing something that is Pussifer, a film, short film, whatever, like, and you've got these many minds, who takes the lead? Is that you, or is it just the hive mind collective that eventually brings this all together?
Matt takes the lead on the musical part, and literally it'll end up being him wanting to see how far he can take the limited capacity of something like a Fairlight and make that ancient piece of equipment work, and then us work around it as that being our cornerstone. Because, you know, sometimes people work better when they're painted in a corner. When you give me parameters, I shine because it's done. When it's infinite possibilities, I think that sometimes shuts people down. They can't function. But for as far as the characters and the comedy and the story, a lot of that ends up being me just kind of chasing farts, if you will.
I feel like that's a t-shirt in itself right there.
Yeah, I just, you
chasing
know.
Chasing farts.
Yeah. Chasing farts since 1995.
Yeah, the painting in the corner thing, you were probably talking about it in a different interview. That was what I watched several of the interviews and everything, but that's sort of how the briefcase moment,
yeah,
with Billy has come apart. That's just something a painting in a corner for.
Yeah, fucking... Tim Cadiente, our friend, he's part owner of the Barton Pereira and used to work at Oakley and Paul Frank, that prick. He introduced his briefcase in one of the videos that we did. And then we just did an entire, I don't want to spoil it, but we're working on two more concert films as we speak. And one of the bits is Major Douche in the war room trying to figure out how to paint our way out of this stupid briefcase corner.
It's just something that, like, movie sets, they have people, right, that say that shouldn't be here because that's going to mess you up.
Yeah.
Like
continuity. You have a continuity person on set. And Tim basically took whatever, if there was an individual that was our continuity person, Tim took them out back and shot them and buried their body. So now we're screwed. We have to paint our way out of this stupid briefcase corner. But that's part of what Pussifer is that embracing that thing that shouldn't be there. And now that becomes the thing. Versatility, it's flexibility, it's versatility, it's creative process and creative thinking and just keeping that muscle tuned and toned.
Because otherwise you're going to have the blinders on and you're going to miss the opportunities for something.
Yeah, you've got to keep the blinders, you know, take the blinders off and just keep open, be ready to adapt.
Which, by the way, a minute ago, I think you were apologizing for saying fucking or almost saying fucking. And I have to tell you, you can do that because I'm looking right behind you the whole time and it looks like two rabbits fucking. So I think we're well past that.
Are they though?
Are they?
They just want to see what's going on.
I had to ask at least about that painting just a little bit because I feel like it's part of the It's one of the people in this interview, anyway, and it's got its own character.
That's painted by a gentleman who I met. He was in a band. I don't know if he's still in a band, but he used to work at Millie's of Silver Lake. Cool, wonderful painter. I don't know if he's still painting, but I bought this one because I thought it was funny.
It is. Went back to Puss for TV as we're talking about those. So you over the years, you've expanded this universe. I think you're obviously talking about it now, where you can take it and where do you want to take it? Like, is this eventually turned into like a theatrical movie? I think you mentioned graphic novels at some point. Have you thought in those directions?
Yeah. I mean, graphic novels, it would be nice to take it in that direction, but again, I'm not a person who does graphic novels. So it would end up being somebody in our extended circle of people that raises their hand and says, "Hey, I'm actually pretty good at that. If you want to trust me to explore it, like I cook, I can make you a pretty badass handmade pastas, but I'm not a chef, and I'm not going to work in my restaurants doing those things. I have to trust Chris Smith, Chef Smith, in our place in Arizona, for him to take that ball and run with it. Just like with Matt being, you know, our engineer, mixer, producer, writer, performer, I have to trust him with those things because my talents are limited. And as soon as you can really understand your parameters, and, you know thyself, right? Don't quit trying to do everything by yourself. So yeah, so a lot of those things end up being, I have to trust somebody who's better at it than I am to take that ball and run with it. But right now, I think right now what we're doing is we're just going to continue doing what we're doing until the next thing presents itself in a undeniable way.
Let's just say how fortunate you are to find the people that you found, though. I mean, you mentioned Monty Python earlier, and you know that worked because of those specific people being tied together.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of how you all, I don't know, luck, fate, whatever that is, but the type of people.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The music that you brought up, of course, that's the other big part of this too, the music and how that fits in there. With there being so much on the comedy side, on the visuals, the album, and you know, we'll talk about the newest album that came out last year. I mean, that's, it doesn't speak to me in the same comedic way. Do you go into the music with that sort of same type of mind?
No, the music is introspective. It always has been. There might be some comedic elements to it, some tongue-in-cheek things to it, but we take the music very seriously. And we just follow where the sounds lead us. But you know, just like any well balanced play, film, book, there's comedy and tragedy. So that, you know, the comedy ends up kind of balancing out the seriousness of some of the content and the music. Even so, you know, it doesn't seem to go together at all, but you know, you need a little bit of that comic relief to make some of that work.
Yeah, even with the darker themes, I'll just use that broadly. It's I can dance to that record, and I have danced to that record. You know, there's been a lot of dancing to that to the new album and everything. But I was listening to it, and I was going back, and I was watching A Curmudgeon's Guide to Define Collisions and Pythagorean Analogy. Did I say all of that correctly?
Yeah.
There's a lot of great words there, but kind of, so that was back in 2016. And by the way, for everyone watching, that's part of the new Puss for TV, you know, and there's a line you say in the film of, you know, we're, going to be okay. I think you said that, and you were talking about this bigger picture topic. And I don't know, like, when I hear that record, and going back to a lot of the music that you've written over the lyrics, like years, like it's paints a picture that is appropriately scary as fuck of where we are as humans, where we are as people, and where we're going to go. But then I see also this video that you've posted about Easter and an Easter poem that you've done. And even as dark and heavy and scary and everything as it is, I look at that and I think, but he still thinks that there's a way out of this. I get a feeling like, is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm an optimistic pessimist or a pessimistic optimist, you know, however you want to juxtapose those things juxtaposed. That's me in a nutshell. That's, you know, that's the Irish Italian guy. Just trying to maintain a positive attitude. But, you know, and I've said it before, daunting as it may be, everything is going to work out. We just might not be involved in where it's going. And that could, you know, I could mean humanity in general, or I could just mean ourselves. It's going to work out with or without us. One way that it's the pendulum, it swings back and forth and finally finds a nice median. So, you know, if you can resolve yourself to being part of that solution and accept the idea that you might not be there when it arrives, fucking right on. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be figuring out what's going to be best for all of us, not just you, you selfish bastard.
And I guess I get that part of it, especially too with how you treat the earth. And, you know, and I'll talk about, obviously you have these vineyards. I don't know if you call it a farm or just a vineyard, but you have this beautiful land.
We're farmers.
That you cultivate, that you do these amazing things in Arizona. And I guess I'm tying this back to your lyrics too, because as the world gets hotter, you know, and we are dealing with climate change more and more every single day, on your farm, like how much is that affecting you? Because I know I'm kind of jumping around a few different points here. Like, you are doing really good things for the earth, but it must be such a challenge at the same time, I'm assuming.
Well, you have to stay in your body. You have to pay attention. You have to be aware, and you have to be adaptable, right? So we see based on, you know, data from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that there's definitely a shift in what we're seeing as far as rainfall, what we're seeing as far as temperature extremes, highs, lows. We're seeing more hail than we have in the past years, I think. Maybe not. Maybe we don't have enough data to really measure that. But you just have to be adaptable in the moment. Yeah, that's just part of farming, right? I remember hearing about, you know, decades ago, like, oh, it's going to be orange. The price of oranges is going to go up because Florida had huge frosts. Well, that wasn't last year. That was like 40 years ago. So I'm not questioning climate change. I'm just saying, being on the ground, I'm noticing differences in the last, because I've been doing this now since 2003, 2002. So I have a few years under my belt, just in Arizona with farming. You know, I grew up in the middle of orchards and farms in Michigan. So that's, I've seen, you know, I saw it there, but just what I'm seeing in Arizona, I'm seeing differences. So, you have to just pay attention to what's in front of you. And I think the hard part is just there's so much disinformation online, and it's so politically polarized, and you don't know what to believe. Half the time, you just have to pay attention to what's in front of you. And if you're living in a small apartment in a large city and you don't really get out much, you're fucked, because all you're getting is just, you have to somehow figure out how to intelligently sort through all that information to find something that makes sense. And usually it's a simple answer. It's not the extreme. It's not Jewish space lasers, for fuck's sake. It's, you know, come on. God damn it.
That is the appropriate response, what you just did right there, by the way. It's frustrating. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Kentucky, which Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack in a statement when I say I'm in Kentucky. I'm in Louisville, luckily, I think, you know, but I'm not from Louisville. And
at least you're saying it properly.
I feel like I would have to at this point. I've been in Louisville for 25
years. Are you
now,
from Louisville?
Louisville. Wait a second. We have a tie back. I'm just thinking about this. I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to get back to it because there's a really important topic here. But Love Jones is from Louisville. And I know the Love Jones guys. And I think you know the Love Jones guys.
Those pricks. Boy, we almost all got murdered at a Scientology center once with those guys performing. It was a glorious night.
I don't think I've ever heard that story. Oh, is that one you can tell?
Nope. Let them tell it. It was amazing. Incredible.
All right.
I will not take that from them. Make them tell that story.
I will. They're making new music these days again. Once again, it's been a long time, but yeah. I'll get that one. So back to what I was getting at. You were talking about the orchards and the farming that you were growing up in Michigan, and I'm going to say versus what you're doing in Arizona, because I had my own eye-opening moments where, you know, again, rural Kentucky, deep in the country, in the woods and everything, growing up, I still hadn't put it all together what all of this meant in the bigger picture to society, to population, to food control, and what that means for power. I'm not trying to put anything on you, assume anything, but when you became a farmer in Arizona, was that more of an open door for you, or did you come in already having a lot of that information about what all this really meant?
You mean as far as planting a successful vineyard, or do you mean just politically or financially? Or, you know, what do you mean?
I guess I am getting to politically a little bit, you know, because we're talking about climate change, and I would say climate change is not a political thing, but it becomes a political thing,
right?
You know, and just what, because farming is so important. It's what you're talking about with the person in the apartments in a big city. You know, there's an uphill climb. There's a mountain that they've got to climb in order to figure out, like, you know, why we're all unhealthy, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, well, you know, when you make the commitment to plant a vineyard in a state, and I don't think this is common knowledge. This isn't something that the average citizen or average politician or average, you know, Chamber of Commerce or Department of Tourism. I don't think this is something they quite grasp in a state that doesn't have it. But when you plant a vineyard, there's a commitment there it's at least a 10 to 20 year commitment, because the amount of time that it takes for the vines to mature, and you don't really know what's going to happen. You can try to do some research and look at some weather patterns and figure out the geology, and maybe you have it figured out, but truly, for a truly expressive site that's going to be something to be talked about and revered and passed on and enjoyed, you know, you're hanging out in the wind, but the commitment is there. So if you understand the commitment of what it takes to actually plant something over 5-10 acres of vineyards, the financial commitment, the commitment in time, the commitment in sweat equity, everything about it, it's a lot, and communities, you know, people in charge, once that gets through to them, you find that they start to support your efforts. And then other things kind of spring up around it. There's other support industries that, if you're successful in this endeavor, all of a sudden you have a local economy, you have local people doing local things and keeping that blood flowing. And, you know, I remember this from my economics class, you know, Ted Winkle back in Mason County Central in Scottville, Michigan, explaining how money is like water. It needs to flow. It's not something that you should be hoarding, Jeff Bezos, Elon. It's supposed to be something that continues to move and it gets exchanged, not hoarded. So, you know, got to put it back in circulation. Otherwise, it's just it's emaciated. So local economies understand that exchange of goods and services and supporting each other, accidentally, intentionally, whatever. There's a movement that's nice to see. You know, somebody can all of a sudden get a few goats and figure out what they need to be legally making and selling goat cheese. Well, now they can do that because there's, you know, there's 50 to 100 tasting rooms around the state that would love to have their goat cheese served as a, you know, as an appetizer or just a side dish with the, to be paired with the wines.
Well, so that's what I was getting at, I guess. It is that community. What I'm trying to say is what you're doing, I find so noble, whether or not you think of it like that. I do.
Because noble Keenan, fuck that.
I know how that compliment sounds. I really, really do. But it is those ways of making the world a better place. You there's a line, and I know we're running out of time here. There is a line in Upgrade, in the post first song Upgrade, the very first line: how does one choose words so magical they terminate or alleviate this morbid despair you feel? And I don't know if that's really coming from you, because for an artist, you know, I hope when I listen to the artist that I love, that it is going to make me feel better, even if I'm leaning into the pain. And I have some weird optimism where I think, yeah, there is maybe a dumb butterfly effect where a song can change the world. And whether or not that's true, the fact that you can take what you're doing and put it into the ground and make a community better, like, that's what it's about to me. So I'm thanking you, even from Louisville, what you're doing in a community in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just not, you know, just to be clear, I'm not alone there. I'm, you know, there's easily 100 plus wineries there and a lot of agriculture in Arizona. So all of my peers in Arizona, I couldn't be doing what I'm doing with the wine without them and without their efforts as well. It's a combined statewide effort. So, you know, me being an island out there doing it, that's not sustainable. That's not something you can hang your head on for the future. It has to be a lot of them doing it and doing it correctly and making the hard decisions and, you know, figuring it out correctly.
Just like Pussifer.
Yeah. It's a combined effort. I couldn't do it alone. Matt couldn't do it alone. Karina couldn't do it alone. So but what we're doing together and collectively and with all of our friends and the extended family, it's a glorious thing.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm obviously a fan. Thank you for continuing to do what you're doing. Pussifer TV is so much fun to dig into. So I'm really interested and excited to see where this whole story goes in the whole universe. So Maynard, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. We'll see you.
Okay.
Big O thanks, Maynard James Keenan. Again, Pussifer TV has now officially launched. Go check that out. And also, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Again, I put out 3 new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all the usual spots that you can get your podcast from. That does include YouTube for the video versions as well. After all that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, including a Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All 3 of them is at Kyle Meredith, then over on TikTok at Kyle M. Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Are you from Louisville?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.